The MX Vice Show.
Everybody, to episode 162 of the MX Vice Show. We have another action-packed show ready for today. For this episode, we're joined by Creo KTM founder and owner Jeff Crutcher, who's doing a fine job making waves in the Supercross world with his team. Before we welcome Jeff, we'd like to thank Whole Shot Motorhomes, Fox, Scott, Fly Racing, Kawasaki UK, KTM UK, and of course AS3 Performance and even Strokes for sponsoring these podcasts. Obviously, start with Whole Shot Motorhomes, the UK specialist motorhome dealer for motorsport transport. They specialise in garage motorhomes and race vans that are suitable for a wide variety of sports, such as motocross, enduro, karting, mountain biking, and more. Check out especially the Commander motorhome that's sure to fit your needs. So check them out online on their website. We also have an article on our website and a YouTube video that you can go check out to see all the great work they're doing. Welcome, Jeff, to the show. How's life? And thanks for joining us after that little cameo we had on the Supercross Review Show. Definitely needed to get you back on because your opinions are great and you just got such a great passion for the sport and what you're doing. So how are you?
Let me just go ahead and get this fresh Red Bull sugar. All right. Cheers, mate. Hey, what is it? It's like 5:15 in the morning there?
Yeah. Been up since 3:30 charging.
Yeah. Very cool, man. So, hey, yeah, to answer your question, man, I'm doing good. You know, I'm in shit since we did the Birmingham wrap-up show. Yeah, it's just been getting flooded with, you know, new I almost said friend requests like it's MySpace, but yeah, it's just been getting, actually, so for real though, like I have seen a couple people that, you know, are followers at MX Vice that have come over. So I'm thrilled about that, dude, because it shows the program's working.
Yeah, mate, that's it. It's what we want to do, spread the word about the riders, the teams, and just the sport and get people into it and just, you know, uncover new stories that they don't know about. And obviously, we've got listeners from all over the globe. Obviously, Australia, USA, UK is pretty heavy too with MX Vice, the boss being based there. And just give us a little rundown of your career in the sport, mate, and how you transitioned from riding. Just, yeah, your career in general, mate, kind of been seen and done a lot, haven't you?
All right, so I just have to get the shameless self-plug out there right now while people are still fresh, they're listening. All right, so for the Foxborough, Massachusetts race, we are doing I can't legally say the word raffle, we're doing a Supercross buy-in to where if you want to be a team partner for $10 or as much as you want, you can buy as many $10, but one single buy-in is $10. And then we're doing a deal where it's the full title sponsorship for the weekend. You get the bike livery, you get the gear. We fully customize, we fully sublimate. Everything is 100% tailor fitted to whatever you want. So let's say, Ed, you wanted to throw 10 our way and then MX Vice gets selected. Or if you're like, screw it. No, I paid the money. I want Ed on the side of the bikes. And we can sublimate your face onto our gear, bro. Is Ed. Kind of like Ricky Bobby whenever he lost his deal with Wonder Bread and it just was me. Same exact thing. Down, Karen. So that's what we have going on. So I just got to get that out there. That's our big push right now. We're going to be pushing really hard for that in Indy. We got a whole bunch of perks. The main thing is whoever wins, we're going to pay you $500 to show up to the race. So that's kind of that's the big thing. It's like, I get there's a lot of people that have to travel that are buying in to do this. And it's like, fuck, dude, I won. Great. What do I do with it? Well, we're paying you to come. So hopefully that $500 offsets all of the expenses. But the thing is, let's see, we're doing the drawing. Don't quote me on this, but I think March 23rd after St. Louis. So that's my plug. Okay. Moving on to your question. So, yeah, man, you know, just to kind of go through the full backstory, my father was a professional racer. in the 70s and late 70s. He did a lot of motocross, a couple off-road races, qualified to race the ISDE, but worked a real full-time job, so he didn't get to go to do that, but he qualified for it, could have went and raced. My dad was a bad dude on a motorcycle, and I'm the second generation of motocross racer here for the Crutcher family, and started in 1995 on a white KTM 50SX. Yeah, I had the SX. There were two models. There was the SXR and the SX. The only difference was the SXR had a cone pipe and then inverted forks, whereas the SX had just conventional forks and just a regular plated pipe. That was my launch into it. And I just was a regular local dirt bike racer, just the same as how everybody's got the same story, you know, but that was what started me. And dude, I was such a fan of motocross, and, you know, obviously I idolized pro riders, and I always thought it'd be so cool to get to be a pro one day. And honestly, on 50s and 60s, and even whenever I first started riding 80s, it wasn't in the cards for me. I mean, I won some Missouri State Championships and, quite a few races, but like, dude, I'd go to local or like regionals or, you know, try to submit my hand at like, you know, Branson, which was a kind of a, like a larger regional amateur national, and tried to Loretta's. I was junk, dude. Like I was 20th, I was not good. Then whenever I got a pair of Kawasaki's in 2001. So on mini bikes, it was KTM. And then on the 80s, I had Suzuki's. And then in 01, I got a pair of Cowies. And it was the first year of the Cowie 85. So I actually raced pre-85. So it was 80s. And then I got the first 85 and just kind of took off. And, really started getting some pretty good results in Super Mini at the bigger races. And, you know, then in 2002, I got a KTM 125, or the late 01, early 2002, I got a KTM 125 and continued with the KTM branding. And, you know, in the novice class, started doing pretty good, dude. Like I ended up winning the South Central Regional in the 250 novice class. I got third in 125 novice, and then went to Loretta's in 2002. Here's a wild thing about me, dude, is from when I was a kid at Loretta's on 65s in 2000, 2 years later, I was back at 13 racing a KTM 400. And so, yeah, in 2002, man, I, you know, was back 2 years later, 13 years old, and just racing the novice class, ended up getting 10th, you know, kind of a marginal result. And immediately after, moved up to the intermediate class. And, you know, my intermediate class, we'll say that my graduating class was Jimmy Albertson, Mark Grady, Jonathan Kerr, Michael Lessy, Davey Millsaps, Ryan Dungey. Well, no, hold on. Ryan was a year younger than me, so I raced against his brother, Jade, who is now Plessinger's mechanic. And, dude, me and Jade did the races. It's so fun to see him, you know, being mini bike and schoolboy rivals. But, you know, that was who I was up against. And late 2002, at World Mini, I got a fifth in schoolboy on the supercross track. And then after that, man, I kind of looked at it as we went to the Spring Nationals in the B class in Texas. And dude, I looked at it like, there's no B riders in Missouri. I mean, Albertson, and then this other kid, Mason Glorioso. But bro, I mean, it wasn't like we didn't race each other a lot. I just wanted to get fast. Like I didn't care about the method or the means. I just wanted to get fast. And I wasn't enamored with amateur racing the way a lot of people are. And this is right at the beginning of the whole Loretta's dream of, you know, going and getting the factory ride and the factory contract. I was on the front side of that, started to see that in my generation. But that wasn't really my thing. And so I said, screw it, let's ride the A class. And so in early 2003, dude, I raced the B class 4 times and moved up and started racing the A class and just got my ass kicked, bro. And like I'm 14, this little, I mean, by comparison to all the other men I'm racing with, dude, just getting my fucking ass handed to me by these grown ass men with full time jobs that, like, I'm on the way up, and, you know, my dad had a nice motorhome. We've got a nice trailer. I've got, you know, I'm racing for KTM USA or KTM North America. So I've got, you know, some pretty top stuff. And, like, man, I had a lot of cheap shots and a lot of angry grown men that I'm racing against that they didn't give a shit about me or my talent. And that really formed the way that I looked at professional racing and what it meant to be a pro rider. And it taught me so much about racecraft and respect and understanding where I was at. But also at the same time, I didn't give a shit, bro. Like, I didn't care. There was this guy that, you know, when I was 14, he seemed so old to me. The guy was probably 25, 26 years old. Carl Hansen. Carl was number 509 and had a CR250 and looked identical to Mike LaRocco on and off the bike. Same build, kind of like this, you know, big, like, Ibex, dude. Like, this guy was fucking huge compared to me. I'm 140 pounds. I've got a mullet, long blonde hair. I'm wearing Axo gear. I'm just this little rail, dude. Carl was one of the first people I ever tried to take out. And I ran into him as fucking hard as I could in this right-hander before this big whoop section at a track called HLR. And this is over like sixth place. And I went down. Dude, I came into Carl and just, bam, hit him as hard as I could. And I fell down. It didn't move him at all. He made it. This is on the white flag lap. He waits for me after the checkers. And at this track, there's only one way out. And it funnels down to about a 6 foot. And dude, and he's sitting there with his bike at like 45. And I can't get past. And like, I'm rolling up and I'm shitting bricks. And I pull up and I'm right next to him. And he rips his goggles off and just stares at me, doesn't say anything. And he's fuming mad, right, that I tried to take him out. And I'm just sitting there, like, scared shitless. And the fact that he didn't say anything, like, he was, you know, he had crazy eyes at me. And, like, what's funny is that moment taught me so much about – you know, when you start fucking with other guys and you're taking dinner off of their plate, you know, by trying to take them out. And at such a young age, that changed the way that I felt entirely about, I kind of said this, about the way that I felt about pro racing. And I realized this is an avenue to make money and I'm going to treat it as such. And it really, being from the Midwest, the middle of the United States, there's a lot of opportunity to make money here as a pro racer. Honestly, it may be the best of anywhere globally. And what's funny is, like, there's not a lot of big names that come out of this area. I would say probably the largest name to come out of the Midwest in recent times would be Dungy, being from Minnesota, and then Justin Brayton from Iowa, Jimmy Albertson from Missouri, and then Trey Kennard. Those are, like, you know, the biggest names, most successful riders from our region. And those are all guys that I race against too. And they were, all of those guys, you know, they were very focused on getting the factory ride. I really wasn't. I was more focused on making money. Because to me, the time and investment of going and doing amateur nationals and the bullshit that I didn't want to do, because we have these fair races here and stadium cross and arena cross. And, you know, that's kind of a trajectory that I'll go to here in a second. But, like, the basis of how I got to where I am now was founded off of the fact that we had these fair races where local fair boards are. Do you know what fairs are, Ed?
Yeah, sort of like events where there's, like, various different things on and then they might have a race incorporated into them.
So kind of, yeah. Okay, so because I know we have a global audience, I'll kind of take a second to explain this because it's really important. In the United States, every state is comprised of like a principality or a larger rural region called a county. And there's, you know, any given state has however many counties. And a usual county in the Midwest is any given plus or minus about 60 to 100 miles wide and tall. And it's all built off of maintaining local governments. So every county in the Midwest, because so much of the Midwest is so rural, has these, it's essentially like the hotspot for 1 week where the carnival comes in, the rodeo comes in, and, before or after the rodeo, they'll build an arena cross track inside of the rodeo arena and have like Tuesday night racing under the lights. And it's, you know, it's very agriculture based. You know, they'll have tractor pulls and quad races and demolition derbies. So that's all the kind of stuff that goes on at fair races. So the promoters, what's funny is like, you'll get these guys who don't own a racetrack, but know how to build a track, that will go to the local county or their county or the fair board who's you know, oversees the jurisdiction of the way that it goes. And they'll convince the fair board to put up thousands of dollars, dude. And like, there's so much money that's up for grabs if you're savvy and you know how to get connected and find these fair races, dude. There's so much money to be made. So while Dungy, Kennard, Albertson, Teddy Mayer, these guys were chasing being a factory rider, I was chasing, now at this time I started racing for American Suzuki, I was chasing contingency and pro purses in the Midwest. I wasn't focused on Supercross at all. And dude, when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, I was bringing home $65,000 a year racing dirt bikes from contingent cash pay. And I'm a nobody. Like, no, you know, I mean, I'm just a local guy at this point that's traveling all over the Midwest, racing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, then hitting a state race on Sunday, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, whenever, wherever, dude, if there was a race, me and Pops were going. Or when I turned 16, he kind of gave me the keys to the truck. Well, he didn't kind of, he gave me the keys to the truck and said, "You're on your own. Everybody knows who we are. Everybody will let you sign the waiver." So I'm like 16 years old, traveling all over the middle of the country. I'm barely old enough to drive. I can't get a hotel. Can't sign myself in. I'm responsible for myself, dude. And like, it was the Wild West because I just lied about my age. If somebody didn't know me, I'd just say I'm 18. I'm 16, 17 years old. And I'm just coming in and raking cash, bro. Like just taking as much money as I possibly could. So my trajectory focused more on just making money as a racer and not having accreditation and not having this reputation. I didn't care about clout. I didn't care about being a well-known name. I wanted to make money. That was what I was focused on. And the thing is, they would post, you know, every year the AMA would post the purse for outdoor nationals, and it's junk. And I'm like, okay, so if I make the fast 40 and on my best of best days, let's be realistic, if I can get a 30-30, I'm going to come home with $900. It's like, dude, I wiped my ass at the county fair with $900 less. So I didn't really put a lot of effort into racing outdoor nationals. I mean, I tried, I wanted to do it, never screwed with Supercross because there were no Supercross practice tracks in the middle of the country. But there were these county, you know, county fairs, regional arena crosses, you know, and then the AMA series when it was, let's see, when I started racing, it would have just been AMA Arena Cross. It was not AMSOIL Arena Cross at that time. And I was racing Arena Cross also whenever my kids split off and started the Buku series. So this would have been the era of Darcy Lange, DeMuth. This is pre-Tyler Bowers. Chad Johnson was still racing. So there's a lot of really well-known heavy hitters, guys that did race Supercross and were extending their career in Arena Cross. So like Brayton, he earned his stripes on Arena Cross. That was his start. And so, you know, that was my focus. So fast forward to 4 years ago, I was working at FedEx as a delivery, as a package delivery guy. I'd been with the company for 10 years. And we had been hearing a lot about corporate change and divisions, you know, converging together. And a regional manager came in and started barking off all these facts and shit about the way that it was going to be, and really made us feel very unheard and unimportant. And the main thing was, is they started discussing our 401k and how they were going to roll our pension into it. And the whole reason that I was with FedEx Express was for the pension. Because, dude, if I did my 30 years at FedEx, which it was a job that I loved, the company, plus or minus, you know, whatever, a good management, I loved the job itself. Worked a lot of hours, but you know, and then I got to the point to where I had enough seniority, where I was working 4 days a week, 10 hours a day, always had Mondays off. So I, you know, would go race and recover on Friday or on Monday. So I had a good deal going, dude. And then this guy came in and started talking about the pension, and it made me realize my whole plan to retire. See, the thing was, if I would have worked at the company for 30 years, I would have retired with a couple million in the bank. I mean, they treat their people very, very well. My health insurance was a dollar. What was it? I'm sorry. It was like $1.25 a day is what it ended up costing me. Like I was on the gravy train with biscuit wheels at FedEx. And this man just changed my perception and made me realize corporations don't care about me. The landscape of having a career is different than it was in my father's, you know, my father's generation and my grandfather's, and that we've already seen here in the States. There was a large over-the-road trucking company called Yellow, and whenever Yellow had mass retirement and there were Teamsters and everybody started pulling from the pension. Well, it wasn't really come to light, but the Teamsters, now this isn't a Jimmy Hoffa days, if anybody's ever heard of Hoffa, the Teamsters were crooked, and the executives, the guys that were running the Brotherhood, they had taken the money and invested it in Las Vegas with the mafia. The whole situation was totally screwed from the jump. The money wasn't there. So these guys, what happened is Congress had to step in. The United States government had to bail out the Teamsters Union. And this is just from in a trucking company, one large trucking company. And it's like, well, we already know what happens here whenever they start screwing with our pension. You know, the history, I'm not about to be a participant of this, because the first thing that they started to say was all new hires after X date were not going to be funding the pension. And it's like, well, a pension is kind of like a pyramid scheme. Like, you always have to have new money coming in. That's how this works. It cannot self-sustain. You always have to have new people coming in and investing into the pension. So I was like, I can't do this, dude. I they don't care about me. I'm not staying here. So at the time I was working just on the side with my little creative firm doing Rip and Ruts, which is a decal company. And I realized maybe now is the time. You know, there's never a good time to quit your job. There's never a good time to have a major life change. I just bought a house with my fiance. I mean, it's everything. There was a lot weighing on me. And this was right before the pandemic hit. I mean, we're talking, this man came in early February. I worked for a couple weeks. Then I had a vacation schedule with my dad to go ride adventure bikes in Costa Rica for a week. And practically all of my time spent in Costa Rica, I was thinking about, like, do I have what it takes? Am I prepared to be the man that I think that I am? Am I prepared to do whatever it takes to work for myself and to leave one of, you know, the most highly respected companies in the country? I mean, you tell people you work at FedEx and they roll out the red carpet, no shit. And the other wild thing is you have that FedEx uniform on with that company badge, got a package under your arm, and you got your scanner. Bro, it's all access pass to go anywhere. The number of times I walked into businesses that I didn't have business there, or like, you know, I'm like delivering to these manufacturing plants and I don't know what's going on there, but bro, straight up, you stick that package under your arm and you got the scanner out and you're going like this and you're walking and looking, nobody stops you. Truly. The other thing, you know, my dad worked for the light company in Kansas City. He's like, you put the hard hat on and a flashlight, literally you can go anywhere. You can do anything. No one's going to stop you. So there was a lot of really cool stuff about the company, but I realized like, this is not what I want to do. I don't want to be the FedEx guy for the rest of my life. I'm going to go for it. So I left the company, made a Facebook post. Hey, I'm going full-time with Rippin' Ruts. If you need stickers, if you need art, if you need social media, you know, consulting or management, or, you know, just branding or writing coaching, whatever you need, here I am. I had a handful of customers, you know, and some fun. I was doing some pretty fun stuff at the time, but dude, the amount of money that I made in the first month of working for myself, you know, it was the best month I've ever had for Rippin' Ruts, because it was also March 2020 and April, dude, in April, I think I grossed like 12 grand in stickers. I was up to my eyeballs. I didn't know what I was doing. I was so scared. Like, oh my God, is this what it's going to be? But obviously that was a bubble. But, you know, then I went riding and I'm racing all the time and I'm managing my own time. And I've got this newfound freedom. And I was like, well, there's a couple things left that, you know, on dirt bikes that I want to try to achieve. I want to go race arena cross. And so I was looking at the time, what was called the Hoosier Tire Arena Cross Nationals. And I knew the promoter and I knew he needed help with social media. And so I reached out to Jay and I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, but I don't want to spend my money on race entries. I don't want to spend my money on gate fee. Let's do a trade. And so we worked out a deal, and dude, he fucking ran me into the ground. Like it was so much better of a deal for him, but it was cool because like an internship, I'm there, I'm at the races, I'm figuring out social management, working for somebody else, racing at the same time. I generated some capital to go racing through, you know, long-time partners. Like we talked about EVS the other day. EVS was a major help in me launching with, you know, the start of the race team. And got another kid from Kansas City, Brandon Yates, he had a Husky, I had a KTM. I'm like, bro, let's do this. So I was like, all right, dude, let's do this. Like, let's just see what happens. You know, don't care about results. Let's just go out there. We'll show up. You know, I was at the time, I was sponsored by Fox. So I was head to toe in Fox gear and got Brandon decked out in Fox. And we matched our bikes up. We put KTM plastics on the front of his bike. And we do the first round of the series. I went out and I pulled the whole shot in the first heat race and ended, and I won it. And Ed, I just was like, what the fuck is happening right now? Like I'm 31. What was that? I was 30 or 31 at the time. Yeah. And I'm just like, how is it? I didn't know I still had that gas left in my tank. And that set the tone from there. I was like, oh my God, I'm still good at this. And dude, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was hyped up. Dude, I fucking cried as soon as I got back to the pit, dude. I just was like, I still got it. This is awesome. You know, and managing Brandon, and I fucked up so much stuff with him, told him every time, you know, cause I kind of treated him like a partner, not like a subordinate. And so, you know, I was telling Brandon about all the money that I'm pulling in. He kind of got a little jealous of it, rightfully so, because I was telling him way too much information. So that was a big learning curve of how to, like, you know when to keep my mouth shut and learning management and understanding I'm the team owner. These guys are my subordinates. They're not my friends first. I mean, we can have friendly relationships. So then after the season was over, ended up getting fifth overall in the championship, which was that was huge for me, and got a handful of top fives and just had really good results. And, you know, it really took steam. And after it was over, I was like, damn, dude, I think this is what I want to do. Like, I think this might be my thing. And so we relaunched in year two, again, Arena Cross only. And I got two guys that were faster than me, you know, because I knew that I was better than Brandon in Arena Cross, but I got two guys that were faster than me. So this was a new step. So I got Dylan Cloyd and Drake Bailey. And Drake didn't have any Arena Cross experience, but Dylan had lots. He had raced Amsoil for a number of years and won a couple AX Lights main events. So I'm like, dude, like, we got some heavy hitters. You know, I'm looking for podiums. And, you know, came back again with Fox. So we're kitted out, dude. Our shit is so sick. I took the pit to the next level. I got sublimated back walls, skirts, table covers, EVS flags. You know, I got lights, you know, and I started to realize it's like, the better I make this look, the more attention that we're going to get. And then we started getting some real sponsorship money coming in. And, Edward Jones. We got noticed by one of the regional guys from Edward Jones, and he was a former racer. And he's like, I don't care what it costs, I went in. And so we worked out a deal with Edward Jones. Dude, I had Sitka. Like, I don't know if you know what Sitka is. It's like the Gucci of hunting clothing. We had SP Tools that year. You know, and this is on the backside of everybody still riding the COVID wave, and everybody's just, you know, free money's going around, and we got all these out of industry sponsors. And then that kind of took me through another loop of realizing, hey, there's an avenue here. There's a lot of opportunity to bring in out of industry sponsors. And I learned so much with my deal with Sitka. Because Justin, who was the category director that I knew that worked there, Justin was telling me that, like, Sitka does stuff with celebrities, and they do stuff with, like, skateboarders, and they call it off-label marketing, and they don't tell anybody about it. But, like, you know, Sitka sends stuff to Kanye. They send stuff to Lil Wayne. They send stuff to Nyjah. You know what I mean? They're like, very entrenched in streetwear and in counterculture and street fashion, but like, it's the most functional, high dollar, best hunting gear made on earth. But they realized that, like, if they do this whole off-label marketing program, that they could potentially tap in and become the next, you know, whatever, you know, whatever's cool that people are going to want to buy, you know, to show status. So that was the whole thing that Sitka was doing at the time. And that was part of their program with us, is they wanted to be part of something cool, a micro influencer team, right? This whole off label, we have nothing to do with motorsports of any kind, but we're going to deck these guys out. Dude, I still have, I don't have it right here, but I've got a Sitka hoodie that I've had for 3 years. It's like, it's brand new. I wear it all the time. And that's where that opened my eyes towards, hey, there's interest here. Like, what I'm doing is cool. People want to be part of something cool. I need to own this whole cool aspect. And another moto influencer from Oklahoma, Keaton McCallop. Keaton goes by, I don't know if he goes by 498 Savage still, if he's just Keaton McCallop, but, like, dude, Keaton and I, we would always have these, you know, these really tacky, like, you know, entrepreneur on entrepreneur, like, you know, sweat sessions of just, like, just spitballing garbage, you know. And it was like, he's one of very few people that I could stand to have a conversation like that. And bro, I mean, it was like two autistic kids talking to each other about dirt bikes. And I mean, we're just so hyper locked in, and like, it's not a really silly conversation. And what we ended up coming up with was the realization that content creation is not about posting the best clip. It's not about getting the littest kit or the coolest this or the best, most factory looking bike. Because whenever you're doing that, you're advertising to the people that you compete against. I mean, original Instagram days, you know, there was a lot of this where, like, dude, I had film. I had, you know, we would go ride and we get all these clips, but like, I wouldn't hit the corner perfect, or my scrub wasn't very strong. And I'm like, you know, Justin Barsh is platinum, you know, that we've all seen how many umpteen times. And it's like, I watch that, and then my content's down here, and I'm not posting because I'm like, well, I can't keep up with Barsha. My scrubs aren't that sick. I can't do wheelies. Like, you know, I'm not doing fucking oppos like Darren Durham, or, you know, whenever that was really big. And that's, I kind of was like, man, who am I making content for? And I started to realize that, like, I followed, and this really came out of this think tank with Keaton, is there's a guy that I follow from LA. His name is Dak. I think it's LaRock or LaRoche. But I follow this dude, Dak. He's got the sickest style, like his personal style. And he rides BMX, like street BMX. And he's just a BMX, like street rider. And like, he's not doing the most insane stuff, but he makes it look cool. He makes it look fun. The dude's probably never competed in anything on two wheels, but I follow this guy because it's like, his shit is sick. Right. And as Keaton and I were talking about this, Keaton asked me, he was like, do you follow anyone that's not the best at what they do? And I'm like, yeah, of course. And I brought up Dak, and he was like, see, that guy's not trying to create content to keep up with the modern day Dave Mira. He's like, he's creating content to just show how fun street BMX riding is. And I was like, damn, that like, he's creating content for me. I don't even own a bicycle. Why am I creating content trying to keep up with Justin Barsha? I need to create content geared towards kids and guys that don't ride and just think, whoa, this is sick. I want to be part of this. I want to see this. And dude, I've got people that do not ride dirt bikes that have followed me for, you know, 5 years, that follow me on Instagram for 5 years. They watch in like every single one of my videos. I don't know who they are. They don't ride. They're not motocross racers. They just think that my POV cams are sick, or that I'm just going around, you know, team owning. And so that really was this huge counterpoint and catalyst towards, you know, what is now CREO, and which is an acronym for Crutcher Racing Entertainment Organization. And like we talked about the other day, is like the E, the entertainment aspect, and understanding that like the days of win on Sunday, sell on Monday are long gone. Now it's post content any hour of the day and keep eyeballs on you 24 hours around the clock globally. So, you know, bringing up EVS once again, I mean, one of their things is they need digital assets. They need photos of us, of our guys out there riding, racing. You'll always see on their kneecap the big EVS logo on all of our gear. It's kind of this weird gray area where nobody has any logos, but bro, we start putting that EVS logo on there, it is so obvious. And the thing is they create underlayer sport protection products. Well, you never see that unless it's just photos of guys putting their gear on, but like they need those assets, not just for themselves, but for their stockists and distributors all over the globe. So like, we work with the EVS importer in Germany. I've been in contact with people in Indonesia that carry EVS. And so like, there's photos of fucking Dylan Cloyd racing arena cross from 4 years ago that are blown up and posted in Indonesian just dirt bike stores where you know, where they have those pit bike races. It's like Repsol products, Dylan Cloyd. It's just like, you know, it's through this distribution model of digital assets. So there's this whole thing that I realized I can tap into in a way that nobody else is really doing outside of just the OEMs, Honda, Cowie, you know, they're taking advantage of that. But it's like, well, there are no rules. Like, and who cares? Bro, we're American supercross racers. Some kid that is 13 years old that's going to the stick hut in the Philippines that rides you know, a scooter that's buying oil Like, if our sick ass photo of Talvicu with the bell ray across his front plate, and it's he's in the red, white, and blue American gear, and it's obviously Supercross. That kid don't know us from Eli Tomac. It's the same exact person. Here we are, Bellray product photo, and the Bellray product's right there. And that's the whole goal, is to show Bellray's sick. You should run it too. So that's like, that's part of our whole model and tapping into that. And it's like, this is all back end shit that I'm doing, you know, during the week and doing during the off season. It's not just working on bikes, transporting, getting gear ordered, you know, stocking parts and preparing my guys and working with the promoter. Dude, it's like you start going into the back end shit and the B2B networking, marketing, and asset distribution. There's nobody else that's doing that, you know, and that's what makes my race team so different than everybody else's. Not everybody, not all of our partners care to take advantage of that, but it's something that, you know, it's like if they say, hey, we need X, I say, oh, how fast do you need it? You know, and I get it done. And like we are at this point where it's like we're an independent team and people want to help us. Like right now we've got really good help with Cardi, Jeff Cardis, who started taking photos for us. And it's like, you know, I mean, I'm paying him, but he gave me a great rate and it's with full release. So it's like, okay, well now the photos of us, we get to use indefinitely forever. So like this badass photo of Jorgen, you know, starting right next to Tom Vial coming into the corner over the weekend. It's like, oh, sick. Next staff gets to use that forever. Bellray forever. They get to use that forever. So it's like that is what they are investing in our race team for. It's not for results. You know, the better the results, the better the content, or the easier it is to create content. But, you know, the thing is like, that's what a race team is. And to me, I coined this term that we're a content team that goes racing, not a race team that creates content. And so with that mindset and looking at everything through that lens of this is an opportunity for us to do something that nobody else will do. I mean, I just went to the line this last weekend and I took, you know, we've got this new RC Cola deal. Dude, I took a can of RC Cola and I've got my phone up. I'm standing behind the big barrier and Dawson's getting ready to do the gate drop for the second qualifier, the time qualifying. And I'm holding it up and he gets, you know, 15, 20 yards out of the gate, then up calls the RC Cola, crack. And, you know, the big foamy top comes out and it's like, nobody sees that coming, but because I was just thinking, hey, here's this silly thing, you know, that hopefully people will see this and be like, dude, you know what? This is sick. Next time I'm at the store, I'm going to pick up a case of RC. That's all we ask for. And it's like, it's totally untraceable. It's totally untrackable. Unless someone sends me a photo where they're holding a case of RC and they're like, they send me a photo, Jeff Crutcher, I bought this RC Cola case because of you. If I don't get that, which nobody's going to send me, actually it'd be pretty sick if people send me that. If nobody sends me that, then it's, you know, I can't go to RC and say, hey, look, it's working. But we can still do the brand representation and start that the first step in the sales funnel. And the first step in the sales funnel is brand awareness. And that's our whole thing, is like putting our brands, our partners, our investors on, you know, on display. And it's not just logos on the bike either. You know, I mean, I see that so much through the privateer pits where these kids will log on to Facebook and they'll be like, help me chase my dreams. We're going Supercross racing. I'll throw your logo on my bike. And it's like, bro, when that motorcycle's going by at 40 miles an hour and the closest that I can get to you is row E at Supercross, because they have the first seven rows, you know, taped off. It's like, I can't fucking, the only thing that I can see really is whatever the biggest logo is on the shroud. So I'm going to throw my logo on your bike. What good is that going to do me? So that's, you know, I know that and I understand that. And I take that concept into now, is our bike littered with logos? Hell yes, it is, dude. I'm so proud to put every logo on the bike, you know, and last weekend in Birmingham, I've got, We've got a team sponsor, Luke, who has been, he's been coming to the races and providing our, all of our catering and food for the weekend. Huge help, dude. And he didn't tell me he was going to do this. I met Luke in Detroit last year. And then he showed up at the first race. He's good friends with Jorgen's number one sponsor, who helps fund Team Estonia, MXON. And Luke was like, he showed up at the first race and he's like, Jeff, I'm providing catering for the team for the rest of the season. Let me know what you want. And I'm like, dude, how sick is this? So I bring up Luke because we were deconstructing the pit on Saturday night. And like, you know, he just wants to help and he's such a major help. And he was dragging, we've got our new Rabaconda rugs, which Rabaconda manufactures the 3-minute tire changer. And if you run a Moose, you have to have the Rabaconda. There's no other alternative. It is so unbelievable. It's really helpful for motocross with tube tires also. But I mean, straight up, all off-road guys, or if you're a moto guy that runs a Moose, you have to have a Rabaconda tire changer. So we've got these badass Rabaconda pit mats that the motorcycles sit on top of. And, you know, one of the things that we do is we take the mats in and I grab them, I fold them in half, I you know, to where the logos are folded up and it's just rubber side out. And I pick it up and I carry it into the trailer and I lay it down flat and all is good. Okay. And Luke was helping and he just grabbed it by the handful. It's all wrinkled up and he's dragging it across the pit and the logo side is down. And I'm just like, fuck, man, it's a rug. Like, it doesn't matter. I have to power wash it anyway. But I'm just thinking about Jackson and Tonu and Jakob at Rabaconda and the amount of work that the three of us put in for us to get part, or the four of us put in for us to be able to have a partnership with Rabaconda and how meaningful their, you know, their help is and how important they are to me. And it's like, I'm over here and I'm watching Luke and like, I'm fucked up because this rug is being dragged across the pit upside down. And Luke, you know, Luke doesn't know the effort that I put in. And it's no disrespect. He's just helping, you know, he's just helping. But I'm like, I'm over there. I'm kind of like cringing, biting my finger, like, dude, bro, that's, you're like dragging Jackson's face across the pavement now. And it's so funny because like, I'm so personally invested in all of our sponsors that like, you know, I wipe everything down and I keep all of our stuff so nice. And it's, And I want to represent our sponsor as well, but so much of it is my personal investment that I have and how proud I am of partnering with these companies and how exciting it is for me, you know, to get to help Rabaconda launch into the United States. And I'm so invested in it that seeing a rug getting, you know, turned over upside down, it like personally affected me. And I like wanted to grab Luke and be like, bro, come on, let's treat our stuff a little nicer. It didn't matter. You know, cause like I said, I'm just going to, and I didn't even say anything and it doesn't matter. And, you know, as soon as I got the rug flattened, I was just like, whatever, it doesn't matter. But dude, like our, you know, like our hole shot devices that are provided by Duval, the Duval X Shot, which is one of the best hole shot devices I've ever used. It's easily the most rugged. Bro, we're still running hole shot devices that we started using in November of 2022 that we've now have two whole seasons on. No issues. I mean, it's got this cool sealing rubber boot on the outside of it, similar to the Worst Connection one, has a little rubber boot on the button, but this thing's ironclad. Anyway, so, you know, I've got some extra Duval X shots, and when I have them in the trailer, they're in this one compartment that kind of has a little bit of a rub whenever the trailer is traveling. And I saw that like the plastic packaging on the outside got a little marred up. And I was just like, God damn it, Jeff, why'd you leave that in there? Like, you knew that it was going to get rubbed up. And I'm only talking about the packaging. So I have such a personal investment. Again, I've said that 100 times in every single little detail in it. And I know that like, and I'm not overbearing and I'm not a micromanager. You know, the little stuff, you know, it slides right off. I notice it. I think about it. It's on my mind. And that is what is going to continue this slow burn growth of my organization, of my race team to the next level, are the small details, being detail oriented, goal specific, and solutions driven in ways that nobody else is. And instead of hitting up, you know, I'm gonna censor some names here, but there's a company that I've got a buddy that works for, and let's just say they make aftermarket parts. And the team manager of a very well-known factory-supported Supercross race team hit them up for free product and cash, and misspelled the guy's name whenever he was reaching out. Didn't include a sales deck or not a sales deck, but like a team overview, no proposal, nothing. Misspelled my guy's name, misspelled a couple things in the email, and straight up said, you know, I'm with this team, and let me know what you can do for me. And I'm over here just like, and the crazy part is, I know that this guy is getting sponsorship by sending out these terrible emails, and it drives me insane. So there's all this stuff that I see that is really rough. And I'm like, do we do such a better job? But the thing is, I don't have the tenure. I don't have the name. I don't have the contacts, and that's all building slowly. It's not an overnight process. You know, I'll kind of end this piece right here. John Anderson from WUSA, who is the importer for Han. He imports Kite. He imports, or he sells Excel and DID rims. And they're our wheel builder and wheel provider. And we use, just for the sake of talking about it, we use the Excel A60 rim, and then the W manufactured heavy duty spokes. And then we're using Han magnesium coated hubs. John called me out of the blue earlier at like 11 a.m. And he was like, hey, dude, I just wanted to call you and tell you what a good job you're doing. He's like, I got nothing to offer you. It just, you know, me and my boys and our family, and we just see and we watch. And he's like, it's amazing because you're doing more for us than anyone else. And you do such a good job. And it's like, you're so passionate, and we give you a discount. Like, I don't get free. I don't get paid from W. You know, I'm a paying customer with them. And he called me and wanted to gas me up. And it's like, that really made my morning, because it shows that, like, here's this guy that's not really invested in what I'm doing, you know, but he's super appreciative of it. And he compared me to another team owner, and how it's just like, they hit him up and they're like, hey bro, we're fast. We deserve free. So, you know, here's our address and here's how many wheels we need. And it's just like, I will never, ever have that reputation. So that was kind of the highlight of my morning. You know, being a team owner, man, there's a lot of hats that I have to wear and a lot of responsibilities that I have. But that was a feather in my cap. That made me feel really good. So that's my, I don't know, what did I just talk for, like 35 minutes there? So I'll let you get in some questions.
That was awesome, mate. It's really an entertaining story, and just fascinating, some of the insights into the inner workings of what you're doing and how you sort of developed everything and have so much passion and just love what you do, and how you do a lot of work for the sponsors, because, you know, that's probably one of the things. It's all good and well having the sponsors, but what can you sort of do for them and do more for them? And your eye for design and how you implement these things is really cool. And it's a great way to spread the word, because the kits are pretty lit, mate. Like, all the reports and the photos you've been sending, they're so cool. And it's pretty, you know, getting a rider like Talbiku, obviously on the topic of the Estonian, sort of, obviously with me, I write about European soccer as well, and a lot of clubs target sort of Japan, Korean, sort of hit those markets up. Obviously they're good players, they've got to be a good player, but sort of there is a side of it that it sort of elevates your presence, and it just brings so much more coverage and eyes onto what you do. And obviously there's a lot of research and intelligent thought processes like what you do to sort of make and cultivate the best decisions. Was that a thing with Talbiku? How did you go about signing him? Did that play a part in it, that international flavor? Because let's face it, the Estonians love their motocross, obviously the Layok history, and there's so many guys, and Kulis, it's got that connect there too. So would love to hear your thoughts about just sort of global presence you're making as well.
So the Estonian connection, you know, we have to kind of rewind the clock to whenever I was racing arena cross in 2005, and Jim Hawley brought over Juuse Lansu, and I raced against Juuse in Portland. and Reno in 2005 and at AMA Arena Cross, and you know, made a connection with Jim. And then later down the road, whenever I actually worked for Feld for one Supercross season and was doing a video series called Inside Track that was just all about behind the scenes, the inner workings of Supercross, like going down to the nitty gritty of explaining how whenever you're watching TV, you see, or you get audio, like a guy goes through a section and the audio is cut to whenever the bike goes by right there. And I was showing off where the microphones are placed in the dirt. So that was my whole thing. I bring that up because Holly was doing Race Day Live at that time. And I was working out of the same department that Race Day Live was. So, you know, just kept the relationship strong with Jim there. And then over the years, I know that he's followed what I do and is familiar with me and my program, and specifically regarding Jorgen, I was looking at guys of like, cause whenever I first started the season, or first started my negotiations, I had two guys that were semi-retired that I was really interested in. I was working on getting Josh Osby and Hunter Sales back into racing. And, you know, both of them, the last time that they raced, you know, Osby was what, national number 56 and Sales was 90. I don't know. He was somewhere in the 90s. So like, we're talking about some pretty bad dudes. And, you know, I'm working with these guys and then Sales just, I mean, disappeared. I mean, he totally ghosted me after I sent him a letter of intent and then a contract offer, and the kid just disappeared. And then, you know, Osby, him and his dad, they own a, they do water treatment mostly in hospitals and doctor's offices. And, you know, he finally just got to the point where he was like, dude, I would love to come back and race, but I'm making so much money doing water treatment. I just can't. You know, it's in the past, and I would love to achieve some more things on dirt bikes, but the money's too good doing this. And I just kind of was sitting there, you know, like, shit, man, what am I going to do? Who am I going to get? And this is in July, early August. And I'm like, I'm getting sponsorship money. You know, we're starting to, and I don't have riders. And I'm scowling and I'm trying to find, you know, all over. And I, you know, Dave Derringer, who's a pretty big part in the Heartbeat Hot Sauce Yamaha team. Dave's a really good advocate for me, and we're bouncing ideas. And we were talking about whatever outdoor race it was that weekend. And I asked him, I said, hey, do you know anything about this Jorgen Talvico kid? He looks, you know, he's riding a Husky, looks like he's racing with Charlie Putnam, and he's, you know, racing on the SC Sport Homes team. You know, isn't it cool that they came over here? And we started discussing that. And I kind of put it in the back of my mind. And then after Bud's Creek, where in the first moto, dude, he ran seventh for like 20 minutes before finally, you know, the humidity got to him and he dropped back. But, you know, Jorgen, I think he was like 1 point shy of getting national number 99. And the weekend or the day before the last round in Indiana, I was like, I got nobody. Let's just see what happens. I'm going to start sending some emails or some Instagram messages. So I just reached out to Jorgen on his Instagram. I was like, hey dude, what's your plan? Are you signed to anybody next year? What do you have going on? What's with SC Sport Homes? You know, what are you trying to do? Who do you want to be? What's your end goal? And he told me, you know, that he wanted to be a Supercross racer. And I told him, I was like, well, I think the best program possible for you, because he had never raced a motorcycle with a roof over his head. So this is like, man, I'm going to take a guy who's used to being in fourth and fifth gear, you know, riding over the rear axle like Kai DeWolf, and front wheel light, rear wheel heavy, manualing everything, and I'm going to stick him on a 19 second blitz of arena cross, and he's going to have to a literal crash course. But if you want to be a Supercross racer and you've never done any type of Supercross racing, bro, I mean, there's only one path, and that's through arena cross. So I kind of just made my offer to him, and And he asked me if I knew Jim Hawley, and I said, yeah. And he was like, well, you know, why don't you call Jim and explain to him? And, you know, I take Jim's word very seriously. He's helped me out a lot. So, you know, I called Hawley, and he was like, dude, this is the best thing that could happen for Jorgen. This is exactly what he needs. I've already told him he needs to take the deal. So, you know, Jim called him back and was like, this is it. You know, I've talked to Jeff, his program is sound. It's solid. It's not going to be the best motorcycle you've ever ridden in your career, but it's not going to be a bad motorcycle. It's going to be a good motorcycle. You're going to have good infrastructure. You're going to have great guidance. You're going to be in the middle of the country where it's the cheapest to exist. He's going to be very invested in you. I think you should take it. And then it was a short while later, and Jorgen and his best friend Merrick were on a flight from Estonia. Dude, the wild thing is, never talked to him on the phone. Heard his voice one time whenever I sent him a voice note asking him to pronounce his name. Never talked to him on the phone. Just did everything through DMs and emails, and signed this fucking 20-year-old kid from Estonia. Never seen him ride before, you know. And I took a big gamble on him, but I knew that, like, I have to do something so different, because Americans look down on arena cross. Most pro racers in America, they look down on arena cross. And so much of that, it's all ego based, because they know that for the last 5 years, they come to our series, they're going to get fucking whipped and waxed by Michael Hicks. They go to the other series, same situation with Kyle Peters. So there's, you know, the two thrones of arena cross have been held for coming up on 5 years solid. And the last time there was that kind of legacy was whenever, you know, Darcy Lange won a handful in a row. Buddy Antonez won, you know, I think he's the winningest arena cross rider of all time. Demuth won a handful. Tyler Bowers was, you know, when he was the animal and won a bunch in a row. It was just like, oh, well, why even watch? Bowers is going to win again. Same thing with Hicks and Peters. And a lot of these guys, they don't even want to race them. And they just don't want to participate. They don't want their ego bruised, because they're pro supercross racers that, you know, I'm a pro rider and I'm not going to lower myself to arena cross and go and get beat by guys that don't give a shit about AMA. They don't give a shit about Loretta's. They don't care about outdoor nationals. Like, they're money racers, and that's what arena cross racers are, much akin to the, you know, like I explained how I came up. They're cut of that same cloth. And arena cross racers, they're pretty gnarly. They're pretty brutal. They're very aggressive. And you, whenever you step in as the fast guy, you're going to learn real quick, the same way that I did when I was 14. You are nobody, and don't you dare get in my way, right? You're not going to step between me and going out to eat tonight. And there's that mindset in arena cross. And yeah, we're all cool with each other, but at the end of the day, it's pretty cutthroat. And so, because I wanted somebody that was capable of going really fast in arena cross, I said, I'm going to have to pull out of the United States. I'm going to have to go international. So that's where the idea to sign Jorgen, and same thing with Gibby, also with Tyler. You know, and I reached out to the guys that own the Triple Crown series in Canada, and I was like, who's available and who's hungry? And the first name that came up was Tyler Gibbs. And what's funny is Gibby actually turned me down originally, because he was like, I only want to race supercross. He didn't give a shit about arena cross. And Lanto, I was like, dude, you've done one supercross in January of 2020, and then you had to go home, and you got in from 41st, you know, as an alternate. I think that you're going to have to earn some stripes here in America and arena cross before you show up at supercross and be ready again. And it's so funny, dude, because, like, my strategy is working. Like, the program, exactly how I wanted it to, is coming through to fruition. And we're and we're sharp, we're razor sharp. I mean, these guys, you got to think, Ed, they did 54 gate drops in arena cross. They rode 36 timed qualifying sessions. And so we're showing up to Supercross and it's like easy peasy. You know, we've already done this under more dire circumstances because the tracks are so tight that it really creates a sense of urgency. So we go to Supercross and the boys are having fun. The tracks are big. They're able to throw whips over the jumps and, you know, they just go out and they have fun and time qualifying and look at how Birmingham went. I mean, you know, Jorgen qualified P15, mind blower. And Tyler was P34, which is right on par. Like we talked about, he's not a great kid in timed qualifying, but as long as he makes it in, we're happy. I don't care what position. And then Dawson, my third man, who I wanted to support somebody from Kansas City. And, you know, Dawson was right place, right time, the right rider. So I'm helping Dawson out. So he's the third man on the team and he qualified 48th. Missed the show. I mean, dude, it was like a second. He was a second out. I mean, you dab your foot once and miss time one wheel tap, and that's a second right there. So, you know, we're talking about just cleaning up a couple mistakes in the kid's end. So that's what's on the horizon for me, is getting all three guys in. But circling back to your question, yeah, I mean, I'm down with the international flavor. I'm very interested in it. I want guys that, you know, didn't grow up able to touch the stars of Supercross, but have looked at us from afar, and if they're dying to be part of it, you know. And I mean, look at, you know, how many, you know, Stapleton came over, he made his bid. Tanti's here now. You know, there's obviously, you know, we've got a couple Aussies at the top of the sport. I'm sure you guys know about that situation, but you know, there's a lot of these guys that are coming in from other countries that, like, even though there's World Supercross, obviously AMA Supercross is still the, you know, the landing pad for everybody that wants to race Supercross. And, you know, I would love to get a French rider that's not that. I would love somebody that races Supercross in France, but isn't French, because I know how the French are. And it's like, oh, no slight against them. Love the French, but it's just, you know, I mean, I don't have a big enough support program where it's like, I can really take care of somebody that maybe the French would need to be. But like Joanne Cross, you know, that's won the Spanish Supercross championship how many times. And, you know, I'm looking at guys like Paul Bloy from Germany, who's been racing. And then Anton Nordstrom, who's here from Sweden right now. I've got my eye on him, you know, so I'm looking at these international guys, you know, that are willing to do what it takes to be here, that like want to come and live the dream. And that's something that I'm very specific about. And I talk to my guys about, is like, hey, when you're riding for me, don't have the mindset that you're chasing the dream. You're living the dream. We're all living the dream. We're here. This is it. This is like, you know, this is the end goal, is to be here. Everything after this is accoutrement. Everything after this is bonus. Everything after this is a cherry on top. But we're here. We're living it. We need to treat it like this is our only opportunity. This is our last. Every night has to be our last race ever. Every lap on the track has to be with full intensity. Every opportunity has to be taken. We got to deliver on our sponsor obligations, over-deliver on our sponsor obligations. We got to treat the fans in a way that nobody else will do. Let's bring them into the pits. Guys, I'm sorry, it's annoying. You got to stop working. But we're getting these fans on these motorcycles. So something that I do in my pits is, you'll notice there's no skirts in the front. Everybody has these skirts and these walls that separate the fans from the motorcycles in the pit. I don't do that, bro. I put our stuff on the sides. I'm inviting, I'm welcoming. Come in, get on the bike, touch it, take a photo, tag us. That's what I want. I want my logos, my partner's logos that are on our back walls, that are on our motorcycles, to go into your social media feed. Just like for those that have seen There Will Be Blood with Daniel Day-Lewis, the whole explanation of the kid at the end of the movie, whenever the pastor kid comes to him and is trying to sell his property. They held out, you know, they knew that Daniel Day was an awful person, and that, you know, the oil baron that he was just evil and crooked and a terrible human being. And they held out, they didn't want his dirty money. And then his parents get sick or they're, you know, whatever happens. And the kid's like, screw it, we're selling the property. I bring this all up because Daniel Day-Lewis's character makes this perfect analogy. I drink your milkshake. I come into your neighborhood and I suck the oil up from underneath your property. The oil is underneath your ground, okay? But it's my property because I have the well. I have the drill. I take that same mindset. I know it's kind of intense. I take that same mindset into social media. I'm coming into your social media and I'm going to drink your milkshake. My sponsors are going into your Instagram feed, on your Facebook wall, in your Facebook memories. We're here to create memories that you're going to have for the rest of your life. Just like whenever David Pingree gave me his goggles in 1998, whenever he was riding Primal Impulse Suzuki at Millville, and I kept heckling him for a set of goggles and he finally gave them to me. I wore them home, dude. Like I didn't take those things off the rest of the weekend, that they're still in my garage. And it's like, you know, I want to be able to create those type of experiences for fans, dude. A perfect example, last year in New Jersey, we were representing Dirt Bike Vault, which was an upstart online, a blog about dirt bikes. It was an interesting format. The guy that had it, he was trying to build this dirt bike website to sell it to somebody else as like a, just essentially like a PR feed. It was, and to do, you know, get Google ad revenue. Anyway, so guy was wealthy, he had some money to burn. And so he wanted to be part of our team. So he's like, just go wild with the bikes. So we did the blue bikes with black polka dots on them. And this is one of the first weekends that I didn't set up the skirts in the front because I used to. And then I realized, yeah, I'm going to change this. And these two moms, I'm going to say they were Indonesian or Filipino or something. There were these two moms that were there with their sons, and the sons had run off, you know, and they're over looking at the factory bikes. And these moms come over and they see our bikes. And like I said, they're this baby blue with dark polka dots. It's kind of a feminine looking motorcycle, and they're taking photos of the bikes, and I catch them doing it. I was like, hey, there is a price of admission to take a photo of the motorcycle. And they looked at me like, oh, I was like, you have to come in and you have to sit on the bikes and we got to take your photo. And they were like, oh, really? And dude, I got these two moms on Cheyenne's bike. So they're both on there and they're handing me their phones, bro. And they're opening these and it's in some letters I can't read. I got no idea what I'm doing, but they open. It looked like it was the Indonesian Snapchat. There was something about it was different. I don't know what it was. All the letters are different. And I'm taking photos and videos of these girls and they are, I mean, it went on and on. It was like, they kept being like, one more photo, one more photo, one more, and doing more videos and more poses and silly stuff. And like, they climb off of the bikes and they're going through the photos and I'm just standing there smiling and we're having this fun moment. And the lady, she's looking at her phone and she pulls it down and she looks up at me and Ed, I shit you not, her eyes are just welling up and tears start coming down her face. And she was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done. And I'm like, this is it. Like, this is all I want. This is here. I've created this memory for this woman that's 45 years old, 45 years of life. And she's telling me sitting on my motorcycle was the coolest thing that she's ever done. How sick is that? Like, I've made this lifetime impression with this woman. And so also, After it was over, you know, they started walking away and they're like, you know, these two moms, they have their arms around each other. Like, this is so cool. And then one of them stops, turns around and comes back. And she said, you make sure to tell your boss what a good job you're doing. And I said, I'll be sure to let him know. And dude, I was like, this is it. Like, this is the whole purpose of what I'm doing, is to create memories for my athletes, for my sponsors, for the fans, and for myself. Dude, if the team disappears after this year, I did it. I got to do cool stuff. I'll have no regrets, no remorse, no negative feelings. I went out, I did something. Nobody gave me permission to do this. I said, I'm doing it and no one will stop me. I don't want that to be the reality, but like, if that does happen, I'm okay with it because of those kind of moments that I had, you know, with those moms. And that's, you know, those are the little things that don't really get talked about. And, you know, the other thing that really rubs me raw are these VIP fan experiences that other people are doing, and they're charging just unbelievable money. And it's like, oh, we get to go and sit in your cabana for $2,000. this is not Ibiza. Like we're not, it's not what we're doing here. Let's not get out of touch of what our sport is. And like we talked about the other day on the other pod, this is blue collar sport, you know? That's a pretty heavy duty price to just go and sit and throw bean sacks around into our cornhole. Dude, it's just, that kind of, you know, I'm looking at that. I'm like, hey, you know, the price of admission to get to sit on our bikes, meet our racers is, I take your photo. That's it. That's all I'm asking for. Or if you want to give us $10, then this motorcycle can have you.
No, it's a great perspective, mate. It's really interesting. And like, the fans get so much of that. And especially the kids too. It's like, they just want to be dirt bike racers. They want to ride all the time. They want to follow their heroes, follow your races, follow your team, see everything you do. And like you'll say, mate, you take that photo and it goes into all their followers' living rooms, whatever they're doing. If they're out in the public, driving the car, in the passenger seat, obviously, or in the back seat, not whilst driving. But you know, like, there's just so much scope now with the social media. And with the team, I guess, what are the future aims? Are you just living in the here and now, week to week? And also, it must be so cool seeing these guys, these three talented, hungry riders you've got, obviously just making great progress, obviously learning a lot. There's so much room for improvement, like you were saying, steady, consistent progress every week. And I guess that arena cross was like a perfect sort of melting pot for them to learn what it's all about, learn that aggression, learn that intensity, learn where you need to be mentally and physically, I guess, because, you know, it's all about the money for those guys. You're taking their dinner off their plate and they're not having it, you know, so a lot of adversity and learning for them as well. So I guess, yeah, the future aims and just how happy are you with the program?
Thrilled. You know, I mean, that one's a pretty short answer. I'm absolutely thrilled with the way that things have gone. And, you know, whenever we, after the first round of Supercross for us was over, I was sure to ask the guys. I was like, can you imagine coming here and doing this without Arena Cross? And like, Jorgen was like, no, like it, I can't. He's like, I would have been so nervous, such a wreck. He's like, it worked, you know, the whole preparation of doing Arena Cross and what it took, it just worked entirely, dude. And it's I'm glad that, you know, that it did work for them, you know, cause it, you know, and looking back where we're at now, the bike skills, the racecraft, everything. And like, you know, this last weekend, dude, you know, Jorgen almost pulled the whole shot in his heat race, and he's next to Vial coming into the first corner. And it's like, this is insane, like that this is happening. And I never would have thought I would have a photo of my motorcycle with my athlete, you know, and we've got Factory Triumph behind us. We have Factory HRC with Hymas behind us. We've got Jeremy Martin with, you know, one of the best factory engines. And, you know, and there's, you know, the star guys are behind us. There's a couple privateers that are behind. I mean, we got a PC Kawasaki behind us. It's like, dude, our bike is stock. You know, I've got a guy that wants to be in the first corner before everybody else. And he's taking the opportunity, and it's, you know, he's hungry. He's hungry for more. And same thing with Gibby. I mean, he can put himself there. He just has to, you know, decide that he belongs in the first corner in first place. And I've asked him, like, I like to remind these guys, you need to be taking down notes for what your goals are. You need to ask yourself, what is my goal for the weekend? And where do you want to find yourself? And it's holding yourself accountable. And, you know, Gibby, one of Gibby's answers was, I want to pull the whole shot in a heat race, you know? And it's like, okay, well, we got a lot of work to do, you know, and I never had doubt that my motorcycle, that my package would get, you know, would put us in the vicinity of a whole shot. But like, here we've got Jorgen proving, you know, with some pretty simple over the counter mods that anybody can do, we're competitive, you know. I mean, fuck, dude, our OEM, our off of the Bees Moto Lab showroom floor, KTM 250S XF is putting out 51 horsepower through dyno testing, mapping, and race fuel, and the Dubok, and you know, we've got the new intake snorkel on it. That's a KTM. It's just a KTM power part. I mean, there's so much that's available that we're doing to these bikes that is it. We're balling on a budget, and we're showing that it's that we're capable. And you know, I hope that it puts us on radar with the manufacturers and lets them know that we're not here to play. And what's funny is, you know, I posted this photo. I brought up Jay Dungy earlier. Last week in, or I should say 2 weeks ago in Daytona, whenever Vial was out front, I texted Jade while he was prepping up Aaron's gate behind the, you know, for the 450 main. And I told him, I was like, Tom's motor has to be the sexiest motorcycle I've ever heard. And that motorcycle is working unbelievably, and I'm in industry seating, and I am hard as a diamond in an ice storm watching that motorcycle operate. Fast forward 1 week later, and my guy is trying to out jockey that motorcycle, and we're right there. And then I get to take that photo and I post it and I send it to Jade, and I didn't say anything. And I just, I wanted to just be like, I take back what I said about Tom's bike.
Oh, that's so awesome. It's pretty cool, obviously. Yeah, hopefully, you know, that's the progress would be getting some more KTM support and some parts, because, you know, you're a prime candidate. You're putting yourself in that position and working towards it, I guess. And obviously, you know, with being such a busy man and there's just so much happening, I guess that'd probably take a little bit of less burden off you having to manage one less thing. It'd be cool to have that on your plate too. But how do you manage your time, and what are your sort of strategies and methods you use to assure you're remaining efficient and not sort of dedicating time to sort of negative causes? I guess you're always trying to be, you know, making it successful and to make it happen. So what are the keys for your success in that regard, mate?
I think that what you're trying to ask is about budgeting and being very mindful over my P's versus Q's. Dude, it's a constant thing. Like, we don't overspend, you know? And I mean, it's, there's a lot of times where I just tell the guys, no, like, I'm not getting external oil coolers. No, we're not doing recluse clutches. No, I'm not putting engine parts in. Like, we're not getting, you know, stage two cams or, you know, whatever it is. You are going, until these men, it's so obvious that their motorcycles are holding them back, that's whenever we start to have that discussion, when we get to that point. And really, that discussion ends, you know, if we can get a 10th place in a 250 main event, that's where I'm going to say, okay, I'm okay. You know what? Let's spend some budget here on some engine parts, because, you know, now we're starting to flirt with beating factory guys. You know, if we're getting 10th place, we're beating other, you know, privateer and independent teams, and we're starting to flirt with factory. Okay, let's spend some money. You know, if we start getting 10th place, their money will come in. Like, I'll be able to spend some extra cash.
And that's achievable.
Yeah, and it's achievable. But the thing is, it's like, you got to earn your stripes, and you have to, we have to do the unthinkable with not good enough. Essentially, it's been done before, and we have to take ourselves, you know, to that next step and you know, do again what some would say the unthinkable is, but it's possible. But you know, it's like, dude, we don't overnight parts. We don't do excess. You know, we don't do excess spending on behalf of like our sponsors. You know, I don't ask for too much stuff. We don't throw stuff away. You know, I mean, like right now we've got, I'm gonna tell you, we've got plastic parts on our bikes that are broken. that are held, it's held together with Bondo and zip ties and baling wire. But, you know, I mean, it functions, and it's, and the thing is like, it would be cool if I had six more subframes in stock, but I don't. And so I have to be mindful. And, you know, I mean, Merrick just sent me a photo. One of their subframes has a crack in the plastic. Well, until that thing just falls apart, I'm not replacing it. And I'm sorry, you know, and it sucks. And I got to tell these guys this kind of stuff, or I just don't acknowledge it. Either I don't acknowledge it, or I tell them it, just, you know, do what you can with it. And it would be, and we have these, Merrick and I have these conversations all the time. It would be nice. And fuck yeah, it would be nice, dude. It would be very nice if we had six more subframes, if I had eight more sets of foot pegs, if we had, you know, 10 more pairs of the Just One boot, if we had, you know, which is a great boot, by the way, but, you know, KTM pegs are a different breed, and doesn't matter what boot you have, you know, it's just going to cut through the sole. And so it'd be nice if we had more tires, if we had more tubes, it would be nice if we had more sprockets to choose from. If it would be nice if we had a lot of things, but we don't. And one day we will, but while we don't, we got to beat the guys that do and get, and essentially take from someone else's budget. That's, you know, it took me years, Ed, to figure out what my goal was with this race team. And I realized the whole goal is to replace somebody else. Like, at the end of the day, through hard work, and whether it's by hook or by crook, we have to take from other people's budgets, because there's only so many handlebars. There are only so many brake pads. And so we have to do whatever it takes to impress our sponsors or potentially future sponsors so much that they're willing to give up PRMX. They're willing to give up BarX. They're willing to give up Heartbeat and invest in our program, because they see what we're doing, how we're doing, how we're capable of doing more with less and returning and over delivering. And then, you know, the thing is, and Lars made a really good point whenever he was talking with Gypsy about, you know, Honda was in a drought for so long, and now Honda is, they're the winning organization, and how he had this weird moment of having to completely change his whole mindset from doing whatever it takes to win now to continue winning. And how that mindset is entirely different. And that, I'm so glad that I listened to that podcast, because I'm taking that into what I'm doing. Is it's like, okay, we've got these steps and these building blocks, and what made us great on step number one, we have to continue. And then whenever we get to step number two, we still have to be great at step number one. And we still have to be awesome. And we have to continue over delivering as we, you know, cascade upward towards, you know, the tip of the spear, the top of the sport. What got us there, still got to be great at that, still got to be better than everybody else. And so that's a lot of what I do. And it makes all the difference, you know, to our sponsors and to our partners and investors that I stay maintaining those relationships and those deliverables and the assets. And that's, Nobody ever talks about that. You know, it would be nice, you know, and this, one of the things that Lars talked about in his interview or his pod with Jace, is he was talking about, we're Honda, you know, we are Honda. We sell Hondas. That's our goal, is to go out and sell Hondas. And it's funny, because it's like, you know, then they have other brand, you know, they've got DID and they've got Renthal and they got VP. And, you know, their merchandise is made by Fox, and they got the Yoshimura pipes. But you start looking at their partner list, it's small. It's very small. They're concerned with one thing and one thing only, and that's selling Hondas. Doesn't matter whether it's Honda trucks, Honda lawn mowers, Honda leaf blowers, or Honda dirt bikes, or Honda street bikes. Their goal is to sell Honda. Flip side of the coin, bro, I got to sell whole shot devices for Duval. I got to sell chains and sprockets for Pro X. I got to sell oil for Bellray. I got to sell handlebars for ODI, grips for ODI. I got to sell clutch levers. And it, like you start going down the list, I got to sell ETS race fuel. And I have all this shit that I have to manage with all these different people. And Luke wants to fucking drag my Rabaconda rug across the dirt, you know. But it's like, that's what I have to do that differentiates us as an independent team versus, you know, versus a factory effort and their budgets and what they're capable of doing. Now they have a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of politics that we don't, you know, we have no corporate. I don't answer to anybody. Dude, I am judge, jury, and executioner. It's like you say, Ed says, hey, I want to do a podcast with you tomorrow at 2. Done. Okay. Fucking I am available, right? It's not, oh man, I got this thing with, you know, Japan or with Austria. No, like I'm in. Let's do this.
Gotta get permission or whatever.
Right, exactly. And I don't have to call them and be like, is it okay if I say the word fuck? Like, you know, is that okay? I like I'm hot that I bought from the dealership at full retail. Okay. Like I don't have to do that. And the thing is like one day down the road, that conversation may happen, right? Okay, Jeff, let's dial back the language a little bit, but stay true to who you are. Okay, I'm happy to do that. I can, you know, that's fine. But until that day comes, I'm going to maintain being the most accessible, blue collar, the easiest to relate to, and the only one that you can sponsor for $10 only coming up in East Rutherford for Supercross. For only $10, you can become a sponsor of the Creo KTM race team.
Do it. Let's do it. Get everyone aboard that for sure. And like you're saying, moto dudes, they're generally like not too precious. They want to hear the language. They want to hear the tough talk and the brashness, a bit of bravado. And like we were talking about with Deegan, they want to embrace the chaos and the carnage and get amongst it and have that little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And, you know, they don't want to hear too much sort of refined stuff, like you were saying, the high pinkies and all this kind of thing, mate. So it's a pretty cool sport we're in. And, you know, big, obviously cool if we get more eyeballs on it and it keeps growing, and that's kind of the direction, and everyone's doing their part and you're definitely doing your part. And hopefully one day, you know, anyone listening to this wants to support you, it'd be very welcome to you, wouldn't it, mate? Because those riders are learning those lessons. They do it the hard way. They, you know, they get through, they face it, and they just keep working hard. And then one day when they get that good equipment, whatever, they'll really appreciate it. Not like a lot of amateurs in the world, especially in America, they get everything awesome. It's incredible. It's all good. And I remember speaking to a trainer in Australia, and he did a trip to America, and he was just saying it's incredible how much they ride in America, those young kids at those facilities. And obviously they're all in programs, dedicate their life to being a pro. And he said they go through engines so quick, everything's just boom, 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 boom. It's just so disposable. And it's kind of cool to hear you're trying to get the most bang for your buck because you need to. It's not like you want to do it that way. It's just a necessity, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, I mean, I went out and I bought new practice bikes for my guys to ride, and you know, we got 20 hours on them already. And so, you know, at a pro level on Supercross, we might be able to get 40 hours out of a piston on, you know, and it's like, well, that's coming up. Okay. So, and those are $700 a piece, you know? Okay. Let me get out my Capital One card, you know? So, no, it's okay, but I'm not a fan of excess. You know, I think that there's always a way to strategize doing the most with the least. And like, you know, I'm a huge fan of Formula One, and I love watching the behind the scenes access and Drive to Survive, and you know, how they have like a guy that flies, each team has at least one person that flies around the world just to make macchiatos, okay? Like some guy or girl is getting paid God only knows how much money flying first class globally to the most amazing destinations around the globe to make macchiatos, okay? And we're over here. And it's, hey, I got a mobile coffee maker with a little K-cup, and it's orange, and I took dimensions and I made a full sticker kit for it. So if you're looking for a Creo KTM Starbucks veranda blend Roast, I got you. Come by the pit. We've got cold RC Colas on ice. We've got Bellray koozies. I've got t-shirts. We got it all, dude. And I'm doing it, you know. So, but it's, yeah, there's a big contrast in motorsports, and even within our in our pits, you know. And we're at the top end of the independents for the guys that aren't out of a big rig, you know. And I look at like HBI and Wildcat and Next Level, and I look at what they're doing, and we're beating those guys. And I've got a Dodge Ram 1500 standard, you know, standard cab with the 5.7 in it, a long bed. It's a Fastenal work truck that I bought from CarMax, and then a 16-foot V-nose cargo trailer that my dad and I decked out, and that's our rig. I don't have a fun mover. I don't have a show hauler. I don't have a pit transporter. We don't even have electric scooters to get around the pits. We got regular skate park scooters, stunt scooters, dude. You want to get around, get to kicking, kid. But like, we got good bikes. We've got good equipment. I've got good riders. Our pit is dialed. We've got the tools, the parts necessary, you know, for a successful weekend. And, you know, I mean, we're good. And like I said, we're beating those guys we're already beating people that have more than us. And I'm very proud of that. And, we beat guys that have less than us also, but you know, that's not really my concern. My concern is to continue punching upward. I want to keep going upward and clawing for every scrap that I can get, and yeah, replacing somebody else's budget and becoming mine. And then, you know, never relinquishing that budget and saying, nope, I will never allow this to go away. It is ours indefinitely until I quit.
No, it's awesome, mate. It's so cool to see what you're doing with the framework. And it is a brutal world of motocross, so you've got a sort of kill or be killed attitude in a lot of ways, isn't it? It's really cool to see that, mate. And before we wrap this one up, because we've gone a bit over time here, it's been a great chat. We'll have to get you on for a part two and probably get up to part 10, mate. It's really cool talking to you about and just all the stuff you're doing, and the fans will definitely enjoy it too, mate. But give us a sort of shout out. Thank some sponsors. Thank the fans and just anyone that supports you for making it happen, mate, as well as some final thoughts heading into the weekend where you're going to be making the main, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, that's the goal. Like I've been writing around about my debriefs about how, you know, we're on trajectory to make a main this weekend. It'll be the first one for the team in our Supercross existence and our second season of competition in Supercross. And I've cried from results. The first year that I won a heat race, the second year whenever I made it into the main. The first main at Topeka, because that was another I still got it moment. Like, I'm still fast, I'm still relevant. And then whenever Cheyenne last season won, he beat Michael Hicks straight up in a main. That was huge for us. And now I'm looking for my fourth cry, the biggest one, whenever we make a main event. And I'm going to be just a babbling brook of emotion, dude. It's just going to come out. And I'm ready for it. I'm ready to get that over with so we can... you know, get past it. I can get past all this, you know, all this shit that I've put together, effort, everything, you know, and just getting everything dialed in, and the amount of effort, you know, that me and our partners and my sponsors, and I'm not going to sit here and rattle them off. It's tone deaf. Nobody actually listens to that shit. But, you know, if you're interested in learning more about the team, or you want to be part of it, or, you know, throw some cash our way. I mean, we've got the wallet is open. I mean, the bills can come flying in, whatever you've got, $1, $5, doesn't matter. The tip jar is open. We're trying to do cool shit that nobody else is doing. You know, there's an old saying in the action sports industry that core is poor, and we are the most core team that there is in the paddock. And we're also the most poor team there is in the paddock, but we're doing the most that we can. And the goal is to become rich and elite. And I'm going to have a guy working for me making macchiatos. And that's the end goal for
Nah, that's awesome, mate. Thanks so much for taking the time and obviously giving up some time during your busy week, mate. We definitely really appreciate it, and we'll follow all your progress and definitely get you back on soon. And obviously for those sponsors that sponsor us as well, thanks to Whole Shot Motorhomes, Fox, Scott, Fly Racing, Kawasaki UK, KTM UK, and of course even Strokes and AS3 Performance as well for jumping on board. Really appreciate all they do to making it happen. So thanks again for joining us, Jeff. It's been a ripper chat, mate, and we'll definitely be keen to catch up again soon, and all the best.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.